Wait. So, hello. We are here another episode of the transatlantic conversations between David Rorix and me, Frank. And today it's a very special day for the US and I think for a lot of people all over the world. The decision is made that Joe Biden would be the next president of the United States, and what that meant to the US, and what that meant to Germany, and what that meant to progressive thinking people, anarchist people. Everything tells us Joe Rorix, David Rorix, because he knows everything. David, how are
Good, Frank. How are you holding up? Yeah, it's like the election results were announced just in time for our broadcast, actually. Like only just in an hour or two ago, I think.
So, how is the situation in your hometown? So, we start with your area. What are they? Are people on the streets, crowds celebrating, or is there nothing in Portland?
I mean, on the national public radio, the local Oregon public radio, they broadcast scenes of crowds downtown celebrating, and it sounded like a very small crowd. I think there's very few people who are celebrating right now, because, I mean, we have a, the pandemic is now they're talking about exponential growth. Like most people who are getting tested in many states, the majority of people who get tested are testing positive. So it's really an out of control pandemic, a crashed economy, so many people suffering, and then I think very few people have any hope for Biden. I mean, the people who voted for Biden were mostly voting against Trump. I don't think Biden has much of a base of any support because he's just like a sort of what they call a moderate Democrat, which means a capitalist imperialist who has betrayed the working class decades ago, and part of a party that has betrayed the working class decades ago. He campaigned on a platform of vote for me and we can have the Obama years back again, basically. He's running as the establishment, He's saying vote. You vote for me and we'll have the good old days back. But those good old days, people were becoming increasingly more poor. I mean, rents were doubling, expenses were rising. It was not the good old days for most people. It was only the good old days, for the rich. So,
David,
yeah.
I go with you. I'm on your side, but I think it's a little minor step according to the pandemic. I think under Joe Biden, it will be a little bit better, perhaps, because he doesn't deny the pandemic. And in the terms of climate change, perhaps it will be a little bit better. But I go with you. He is like all the other presidents. And I see the last days at CNN, and they also talk about the great nation and un-American, and that the new president must unite all the people. And I think that he adapts the right side and the fascist side more. So I think it won't be much better, but I hope that not so much more people will die in the US.
Yeah, that's a nice hope. I mean, I hope so too. Although, unfortunately, I think the pandemic is already so out of control that there's just going to be a really high death toll coming in the next few weeks and months. And Biden, assuming he actually, gets in to the presidency, which it looks like he will, he doesn't actually take power until January 20th. So between now and January 20th, that seems like there's a lot of time for Trump to do a lot of things. I don't know. I mean, for somebody who's resisting the notion of losing the election and who is such an unpredictable character, who knows what's going to happen between now and January 20th. I mean, when people talk about like they're happy Biden won, I mean, it's like it's as if they're sort of skipping ahead to January 20th, which in a normal year maybe is something that's sort of somewhat realistic, because most presidents, as they're leaving office, are not going to do something like start a war in November. You know, I mean, they'll wait until the next president, you know, so no major things usually. But in this case, who knows? Who knows what's going to happen in the next few weeks? It's, I have no idea.
So I'm also concerned about that Donald Trump, in his last months of his presidency,
that's a good one.
He will take revenge, because he said, "Okay, you have got 2 months left, and so I will taste revenge, and I will do a lot of bad things for the American people," and that that he will estimate and not estimate strengthen it. Do you have also these concerns that
were
worse in the last months?
Yeah, that, I mean, it's at least it seems like it's possible that what we could see now is a pattern that has become familiar, which is at first Trump tries to do something outrageous and he meets some resistance from within the ranks of the Republican Party for the first few days, and then he gathers together his sort of base of support within the leadership of the party, and then they put the other Republicans in line, and then he gets the thing going in the direction he wants it to go in. It's just unclear whether he's going to be able to do that this time, because clearly he lost the election. But despite all efforts at rigging the election and, you know, taking away the vote from millions of people in various ways, all in many different states, despite all those efforts, he lost. And, you know, he didn't lose by that much, but he lost. And I think, you know, a lot of the Republicans who are kind of living in some version of the real world will have to recognize that he lost, and they won't go along with his effort to keep power, even though he lost. But that's unknown. I mean, I think one thing that we can say for sure about Trump and his time in power is that you cannot predict the future very accurately. You know, things can happen and we don't know what can happen. It's very complex. There are a lot of forces at play, and there's a lot more going on than just politics in the halls of power. There's also in the streets, we have people walking around cities throughout this country right now with assault rifles. You have, you know, in every one of these places where they've been counting the vote, you have dozens or sometimes hundreds of far right people walking around with American flags and, you know, semi-automatic weapons. And also on the side of the Black Lives Matter protests, increasingly people are carrying guns. So it's and there's, you know, more guns now in the homes of Americans than ever in history. And so many of them have been bought in the past few weeks.
So, topic guns. What's very hard to understand topic here in Germany, that you're allowed to have a gun, to use it, and that it's your own right to have it. And also, President Obama tried to do something against the NRA. But do you think that under the Biden administrations there will be efforts for gun control, or do you think that's the opposite, that he just say, okay, I have to do some politics for the Republicans, so I won't do anything about gun control?
I mean, as far as I recall, the last time that there was, now I don't think the Obama administration was ever able to overturn to put back in place the assault weapons ban that actually was put in place, I believe, under George W. Bush. And but now I can't remember. I don't remember the details. But basically, there was, for a long time, there was something called the assault weapons ban. And what it meant was, it just meant that it was significantly harder for people to actually buy rapid fire guns. Still, it was easy to get rifles and pistols that did not fire, you know, rapid fire, right? But then when the assault weapons ban was overturned, and it became incredibly easy in much of the country to buy, you know, automatic weapons, the kind that you use on the battlefield. And since then, the number of massacres have increased dramatically, and the death toll in the massacres has increased dramatically. But I don't remember the specific numbers in terms of how much and when and all that, but that's been the trajectory. That's been the trend. And it's just terribly, very worrying. It's just extreme. It's terrifying. I mean, you got people walking around with guns all the time, all over the place, especially the far right.
Yes. And I've heard a report about somebody who sells guns, and the reporter asked him if there will be a next civil war, and he said no, because the Democrats, they have no weapons. But I think that's not true, or is it true?
Well, I think it's not true, because I mean, there's definitely a lot of Democrats with guns, as well as a lot of left wingers with guns. But definitely, by far, the most guns and gun use and gun ownership and gun advocacy is among the far right and the Republicans generally. But I think that when we're talking about civil war, and the term is getting talked about, you know, getting used a lot, and a lot of people in the United States and maybe in other countries, when we think of civil war, we think of the American Civil War or the English Civil War. We think of people lined up in rows on the moors of England or on the fields of Massachusetts, or whatever. You know, this is not the kind of civil war we're talking about. And this civil war, that's, if there's going to be one, will be much more like the Irish Civil War. It'll be death squads, the Salvadoran Civil War. It'll be death squads killing left-wing activists, that kind of thing, going up to their homes and shooting them and that sort of thing, not people lining up on battlefields. And it will be a one-way kind of thing, I imagine. It won't, I mean, who knows? I have no idea. But at this point, I don't think there's much of a armed movement on the left so that there would be any kind of serious response in that kind of way. You know, I think that it's just not the situation here, but these things can change.
So you think there is the possibility that the far right is trying to overthrow the government, or just they're making some special in terrorist actions, like bombing something or killing a left activist or other people? Or do you think they really have tried to overthrow the new government?
I mean, there was this plot to kidnap the governor of Michigan that the FBI stopped. But generally, I mean, I think apparently these kinds of things are happening much more often. But from what I'm seeing, at least from my own vantage point, it's really mainly at this point a matter of attacking people who are having any kind of a protest. So what's been going on is like what happened with the teenager from Illinois, Kyle Rittenhouse, who crossed into Wisconsin and killed two people at a protest. I think that kind of thing is the main concern. The far right is showing up at protests which are happening because of black people being shot in the back by the police, like what just happened 2 weeks ago, or was it last week, in Vancouver, Washington, 10 miles north of here. A young man, 21-year-old man named Kevin Peterson Jr., was shot 15 times in the back by the police while running away. And apparently he may have committed some kind of crime. I don't know, but that's what they allege, but they shot him in the back while he was running away and his hands were in his pockets. So there was a lot of people obviously very upset, you know, at another police killing of another black man in this society. And there were many hundreds, maybe 1,000 or so people at the demo in Vancouver. I was there. And the far right, the Proud Boys were there with automatic weapons and an armored personnel carrier. You know, they had an armored car. They had it looks like a tank. You know, it looks like a tank. It doesn't have a turret, but otherwise it looks like a tank. And of course they have their pickup trucks with flags. They look like ISIS fighters, like the way that they dress, you know, and the way that they have their pickup trucks. The only thing that's missing are the rocket launchers, you know, but they have the automatic weapons, the pickup trucks with the flags, very much looking like ISIS fighters in the deserts in Iraq and Syria, in terms of the way they're outfitted and the way they drive around with armored personnel carriers and pickup trucks, you know. But and I don't know if they're aware of this. I don't know if they're thinking, oh, we want to look like Islamic State, but that's what they look like, you know, in terms of you know, when you think of people with automatic weapons, pickup trucks, and flags. I mean, I think of ISIS, you know. I mean, that's the image, you know. That's how they get around, mainly.
You know? But I think they have got the same attitude like the ISIS fighters. They won't admit it, but also their behavior against women, the authoritarian style, that they want to have a leader. Their leader is called... Donald Trump, and the ISIS leader is Mohammed or their god. So I think they have a lot of in common. So I think the situation is very sad. And what is there anything that you say the Americans that want to have a real change in the society, just in their actual surrounding, do you think there will be a movement, or does the whole movement that was formed against Trump is now breaking together, is not existing anymore because now they have their aim that Biden is president, so they say, okay, everything is all right? Or do you think there will be progressive people that try to do something?
It's so hard to say because we've never lived through a time like this where we have the weakest possible Democratic candidate trying to take power at a time when there's an out of control pandemic and an economic depression. So that's all new. But what I can say for sure is that during the Bill Clinton years and the Barack Obama years, a lot of people fell asleep and didn't do anything much. But at the same time, those years also gave rise to some of the best organized, the kind of protest movement that really, I think, had more of an impact because it was explicitly anti-capitalist. Like, it was during Bill Clinton's reign near the end that the global justice movement was getting really organized, and the protests at the WTO in Seattle and all that. That was all during Bill Clinton. And when Obama, during the latter half of his presidency, you had the rise of Occupy Wall Street and, of course, the Tahrir Square uprisings in so many countries. And not that that was, you know, that would have happened regardless of whether Obama was in the White House in the United States, of course. But in terms of, I think there's all kinds of possibilities for social movements. But what is definitely clear to me is that we absolutely have to have a massive social movement like nothing we've seen before if we're going to change the situation here, because Biden is not going to do it without massive pressure, and certainly Trump wouldn't either. But basically, if people don't, if there isn't a massive upswelling of a multiracial working class uprising against the capitalist establishment imperial status quo, then we're really doomed, because what is abundantly clear to me and a lot of other people is Obama and Bill Clinton and Biden and Hillary Clinton and this whole crowd of mainstream neoliberal imperial Democrats, they are the vehicle for fascism. They are the delivery system for fascism. And if we want fascism, then we can just keep on voting for Democrats and we'll end up with fascism. Because what the people need and what they're demanding is to be fed and housed. What the people want is healthcare. They want, basically, they won't say the word, but what the people want is socialism. And if they're not going to be given socialism, then they will demand the closest thing they can find to socialism. And what is the closest thing that you can find, as strange as it seems to an educated anarchist with a historical perspective, as strange as it seems to the average person, when they see a socialist and they see a fascist, they often are seeing something that to them looks similar. And if they don't get real socialism, they will go for what you could call fake socialism or national socialism. You know, it and you see Trump, and if you listen to his rhetoric, not the way it's filtered on the liberal press, but if you actually listen to his speeches, which is one of the main mistakes I think the pundits make, they don't listen to his speeches. Subscribe to Donald Trump on YouTube, like I do. Listen to his actual speeches from beginning to end. And what you will hear is classic National Socialist rhetoric. What you will hear is he's appealing to the working class and to their desire for prosperity, and he is baiting them with all sorts of racist and xenophobic stuff and nationalistic stuff. But his bottom line, his basic appeal is that I'm fighting for you against those people that are trying to keep you down, those Chinese and those Mexicans who are trying to keep you down. But the appeal is not just against Mexicans and Chinese. It's in favor of the white working class, which is never named as the white working class, but that's who he's trying to appeal to, you know, and that's if people don't get socialism, they will opt for fascism. And if you want to prevent fascism, you need to give people socialism. And that's just how it is here and everywhere. And the Democrats are living in a fantasy world if they don't think that's the case. If they think that people, what they really want is capitalism, they're wrong. People are constantly rejecting capitalism. They don't say that. They don't know exactly that we're rejecting capitalism, but you can see how they're voting. And you can see you know, how they vote in local initiatives too, like here in Oregon. People want socialism.
Yes, I think so, because it's the problem with the term socialism. Well, because a lot of people think socialism is like the system in the former USSR and the former GDR, that is socialism, and that has nothing to do with socialism or anarchism, in my opinion.
At this point, the former GDR would look good for many Americans. I mean, in the former GDR, you had the Stasi, yes, but you also had full employment. You had people with good health care, with largely decent housing. You know, you didn't have millions of people homeless living on the streets. You didn't have tens of millions of people without health care. You didn't have one in five children going to bed hungry. Actually, the GDR was people; they were better off than here right now. For the average person.
Okay.
I know that's not the kind of socialism I'm advocating for sure. I mean, I don't want to have any kind of authoritarian state by any means. But what people want is what we talk about. I mean, I know the term socialism is very loaded, but what, and of course, I, you know, it's important to to note, you know. But of course, yeah, people don't want authoritarianism. But what people do want is healthcare, housing, you know, free education that's good for all children. You know, that's what people want. You know, they want those basic, what much of the world thinks of as basic human rights. They want that here too, you know. And they don't have it.
Is, like socialism and anarchism, and the words are used in a very bad manner. So I think Donald Trump said, "Okay, you have to vote for me because otherwise there's socialism, and that's bad." And also the Cuban people, and so and I think it's. We have also these conversations about do we say we are anarchists, because everybody thinks anarchist this is chaotic, they are violent, and so perhaps it's better you have the same attitude, but you use another term. And there are a lot of discussions here also in my groups. And I think I'm an anarchist, and I could everyone explain why. And that's, for me, it's not an ideologic, it's a thing to organize a society in a way where a lot of people could contribute. So what do you think about using this term socialism or anarchism? Do you think it's good to use another term, or do you think, no, that's not my opinion?
I have spent most of my life avoiding the term socialism and avoiding the term anarchism, and just talking about these things by talking about what I really mean, you know, and because the terms are so loaded and so confusing for so many people. But at this point, when I talk about the people wanting socialism, I use the term because specifically because Trump is constantly using the term. He's constantly using the term as something that people don't want, and actually, it's the opposite is the case. What, you know, and I'm using, but I'm not using the same definition of socialism. That when he says socialism, he means, as you say, authoritarianism, like the Stasi and stuff. But of course. But I think what many people understand as socialism is when the government ensures that you have these basic human rights met. They understand that it's not just about meritocracy. It's not just about equality of opportunity. It's about having basic human rights met. And at a time of Great Depression and pandemic, I think more and more people believe the government should be helping, making sure that their basic human rights are being met, like housing, healthcare, and that sort of thing. But it is a loaded and problematic term. And also the term anarchism, I mean, you know, I would maintain that the most effective social movements and the best organized social movements and the most forward-thinking social movements and the ones that have actually had the best luck at organizing with the fewest resources in the United States and in Europe over the past several decades have been movements organized by anarchists. But in most cases, they don't call themselves anarchists. I mean, in most cases, you know, you could go to a meeting of really experienced Occupy Wall Street people, not the ones who just started the thing, who were, you know, teenagers, but like the ones who actually had the idea and got it rolling, who are slightly older. You know, most of them are anarchists, and most of them would never actually publicly identify as such. And that was also true of the global justice movement and many other movements, because, of course, in the media, when they talk about anarchists, they're talking very specifically about Black bloc youth who are out there in the streets of Portland with umbrellas, getting tear gassed, and a couple of them are breaking windows. You know, that's what people think of, and they may also be anarchists, but you certainly don't need to throw a rock or even know how to throw a rock to be a good anarchist. This is not, it's not part of the requirement. It may be a handy skill at some point in your life. You may want to learn how to throw rocks, you know, but it's not, it's not necessary.
But if you're too weak, you're not able to throw a rock.
Yeah, there's still a place for you within the anarchist movement.
Yes. And I think now what Biden says, he just wants to do something against the far right and the far left. So he wants to have all the ordinary people, the people that are rich, that are profit from capitalism, that are hardworking, and also that CNN. I watched it now for a long time because I have no other broadcast system here. I don't have any local anarchist TV station from the US. So I watch CNN. And what, in my opinion, they always talk about these nationalism and that they're proud to be Americans. And if you hear that in Germany, it's like it's like some far right people talk like that. And you know, I know CNN, it's not far right. It's they are in favor of more for the Democrats.
CNN, your two options here are far right and really, really far right. I mean, by German standards, those are the options. I mean, in terms of socially and politically, you have the Democratic Party, which is like, you know, basically far more. I mean, there is no German equivalent to the Democratic Party. The Democratic Party is so much further to the right than anything on the German political spectrum. And actually, the Democratic Party is so much further to the right than any European party outside of, I don't know, maybe Russia, you know, because the Democratic Party, the leadership of the Democratic Party, not only are they proud nationalists and constantly ending their speeches by saying, God bless our troops. Biden ends all his speeches these days by saying, God bless our troops. But the Democratic Party, the leadership of the party believes that even during a depression and a pandemic, we should be spending over $700 billion this year on the military. And that's a bipartisan consensus. And that is the Democratic Party that actually voted last year to give Trump billions, tens of billions of dollars more than he was asking for in the military budget. That's the Democratic Party. And in Europe, there is no party that is advocating for spending more than 3% on the military budget in any country in Europe. And that is really quite something to say. And that is a fact. And if, you know, if any European party were to advocate for spending anything close to the amount we spend on the military, you know, if any European party were to say, let's cut social spending and, you know, multiply our military expenditure, they would not get into office. Or if they were in office, they'd be immediately voted out of office. But, you know, here in the U.S., spending half of your federal tax money on the military while millions of people are living on the streets and tens of millions have no health care and there's an out of control pandemic, that's normal here. So there is no, it's really hard to find any way to compare how far to the right the Democratic Party is in a European context.
So you have in the legal political terms, you just have a party that's right and the party that's more right.
Yeah, that's
more
it.
Right. And you have no, for all the other people that are not far right or for more right, they have no chance to change something in the political way. The only chance they have is to change something in their local area or change something on the street. Is that right?
I mean, I think ultimately change happens in this country where we don't have a multi-party democracy, where we really don't have much of a democracy at all. you know, in this country, historically, change happens on the street. It doesn't happen because of enlightened politicians doing the right thing, or because a new party gets elected to power. That never happens here. It's always the two traditional parties are getting pushed by events on the street or in the world, and they respond to those events, you know. And that's the New Deal in the 1930s was led by an administration that came to power talking about how great capitalism was. And, you know, had they had no intentions of implementing these kinds of socialist programs, but they were forced to by the Depression and by the militant, massive left-wing movement against capitalism that the 1930s was, you know, known for in you know, in much of the world, in the US very much. There's a huge anti-capitalist, you know, movement led by, you know, communists and socialists and also anarchists. And it was just the government had to respond to that, and it wasn't, you know. So that kind of thing can happen again. And I mean, in terms of elections, I mean, certainly it's definitely worth noting that while there was not a blue wave of democratic victories around the country, and I did not think there would be, what you did see, and what I also predicted, was that the candidates backed by Bernie Sanders won all over the country. They won. And the candidates backed by the mainstream of the Democratic National Committee, the more mainstream capitalist imperialist Democrats, even with the help of Bloomberg's billions and so many other corporate donations, even after spending more than I think any party has ever spent in the history of elections in the world, they still lost. And that is because the people, again, they want socialism. And that's what they're voting for at every possible opportunity. They're voting for the Sanders-backed candidates and against the others. And here in Portland, even though, you know, the problem with so many cities in this country in terms of local elections is most of the cities in the country are completely controlled by the Democratic Party. So they're one party states. And so you have one Democrat running against another Democrat, and they all act like the progressives, because if they want to win, they have to be progressive, because that's what people want. And so you have to try to figure out which one of these is the real progressive, if any of them are, and which one is the capitalist pretending to be a progressive. And it can be very hard. You know, even if you're really following local news, it can be very difficult to tell which one is which, because they're all trying to pretend to be progressive. So what happened in the local election is the real progressives lost the race for mayor and lost the race for city council. And the landlord and police supported candidates won. So, but at the same time, the local initiatives, which are these ballot initiatives where they explain what is this proposal that it's explained in a paragraph. What is this thing? You vote against it or you vote for it. So all the good ones, most of the good ones won. We voted overwhelmingly to tax the rich in order to fund universal preschool throughout Portland. We voted overwhelmingly to legalize psychedelic mushrooms. We voted overwhelmingly to decriminalize all hard drugs in the state of Oregon. We just did that. That just happened. And so when good things are on the ballot as an initiative, overwhelmingly people see that's good. Let's vote for that. But you know, when it has to do with these progressive candidates all pretending, you know, these so-called progressives all pretending to be progressive, and you have to try to figure out, you know, which one is the real sheep and which one is the wolf in sheep's clothing. I mean, it's very difficult for people, and they just fail to do it. You know, they don't have that kind of, you know, most people just don't pay close enough attention to try to figure that out. So it's tough.
So the people that are in favor of Bernie Sanders, that are the more progressive people in the Democratic Party, and do you think they have a chance that these progressives in the Democratic Party, that they get more influence? And the second question is next vice president, the Harris. What do you think about her?
I mean, in terms of the Democratic Party and the Sanders wing getting more influence, I'd say basically what the Sanders wing, what they tend to do is they speak out against, they speak out for their own ideas and against some of the bad capitalist and imperialist ideas coming from their party leadership. And then when Pelosi tells them to get in line, they get in line. But other times, sometimes they dissent. And like with the last military budget, there were, of the 535 people in the Congress, I believe there were 100 who voted against it. So there were, so you could, you maybe optimistically, one out of five people in the Congress is somebody that we could potentially work with, you know, who is not in favor of empire building and uncontrolled capitalism, maybe one in five, but that's not enough, you know? So, and then there's so many forces arrayed against them, but if things get desperate enough, then who knows, then they might have a lot more influence and the rest of the politicians might be looking to them for, you know, for saving capitalism from itself, you know, because things are going to get much more desperate with the pandemic and also with all the evictions. If they don't extend the moratorium on evictions, we're looking at tens of millions of people getting evicted as soon as that moratorium ends. So it's a really time, it's a ticking time bomb of economic desperation and disease. So I don't know. But yeah, the fact is though that the candidates backed by Sanders, the candidates on that list, on the, you know, what you could call the Our Revolution list, you know, that's his organization, Our Revolution, it's called, on that list, they mostly did very well, and that is a fact. So that's, you know, and whether the leadership of the party looks at that and says, oh, look at that, the people want Sanders, they want socialism, they want something more like social democracy. You know, they know, I think the leadership of the party, they cannot be stupid enough that they can't be so stupid that they don't see that. I think they do see that Sanders would have won, that Sanders was the more popular candidate, and that Sanders would have beaten Trump both in 2016 and 2020. I think they understand that. And most of the voters of who vote Democrat do understand that and believe that, but the leadership of the party, they would actually rather have fascism than socialism. They would rather support Trump than support Sanders, and that is just something they have demonstrated very clearly. They would rather have Trump than have Sanders.
So at the end of the interview, let's talk about a little bit what I'm at the moment a lot of concerned about is the pandemic in the US. And do you think after the election there will be a pressure from the streets that they have to do a lot of things against in the pandemic? So I saw a lot of people now celebrating in the streets. They wear masks, but there were no social distancing. So I think the pandemic is spreading and spreading. And do you think there are any things where you can say, okay, there is a chance to do something against it?
Well, I mean, now we have, you know, community spread that's completely rampant. There's no way to do contact tracing and control it at this point. That's long been not possible. It's a just totally out of control pandemic. Although, as far as I understand, from what the scientists are saying, they don't see any evidence that when people are gathered outside with masks on, like at the protests, that this is causing any significant spread. So I don't know where they, you know, how they reach that conclusion, but they are, what I'm hearing a lot is they're saying that the Trump rallies are super spreader events because most people are not wearing masks. Okay. But when it comes to like Black Lives Matter rallies or Democratic Party gatherings where everybody is fastidiously wearing their masks, apparently that really prevents the virus from spreading. So I don't know, but I mean, basically, of course, if you have half of society going around not wearing masks and the other half is wearing masks, which is the situation here, then you're doomed, right? Because what you need is, if the masks are so helpful, then everybody needs to wear them. You can't just have half the people wearing them. So, I mean, you know, I am not a scientist, and I don't know what the, you know, the overall solution here is in terms of the, you know, how to get out of this terrible situation we're in, you know, from and still have, you know, people, you know, surviving. I mean, I don't know what the, you know, how that works at this point, but certainly if masks are helpful, then everybody should be wearing them, and that's not happening.
So, David, was really nice talking to you, and it's always good to have information from the first hand, like we say. I don't know if that's right.
Yeah, that's right. First-hand information. Yeah.
I hope if we talk in 1 month, there will be a little bit better situation.
But what's been going on in Germany, though? In Germany, there's been, I hear all over Europe, there's been a spike in the virus. I mean, it's nothing like here, but it's something that the authorities are concerned about, right? Because it's coming out more than a 1-to-1 ratio or whatever, 1.1 or whatever.
Yeah, okay. Okay, that's good. I talk a little bit about Germany. In Germany, since last Monday, we have got a little lockdown, they say. That means all the bars and restaurants and all the cinemas and the artists, the singers and all these people are not allowed to do anything. But the schools are open and they have to wear masks, but it's normal. They are normal teached. The experts have said they have to part the classes, but the government said no, we don't have the money for additional teachers, and all the other things, all the economic things, the supermarkets and every shops, they are open. And so people are going to do their party in their private room. So I think these shutdown will do nothing, except that people like you, and I have got friends that do improvised theater. And at the moment, I started to make a documentary for them, a film, and they have got nothing to perform. Now, at the moment, they starting to perform also a live broadcast. And these people, they are suffering and they are going down. But all the big ones, they will survive. Like it's always. So I think they decide in December if they what they do, if they end the lockdown, or if they verlängern, keep going with the lockdown. So I think what's important is that they what I say is that they have to abolish the alcohol at the moment, because there are a lot of parties going on, but you know, it's like in the US, the economic things are they rule, and everything, the other things have to unterordnen,
take second place. Yeah,
take second place. So that's the situation in Germany, and also me. I was making films for vacations, hotels, and a little vacations where you go on holiday. So they could I make little films for them, or I try to make films for bands, music videos, and so it's nothing. It's like in your thing, and that's the problem. All the people that are in the culture business, they got more and more problems. And also, I think the cinemas, they without COVID, they have problems because there are not so much people going to the cinemas. And now a lot of things shut. So the politicians have, with this lockdown, it was, in my opinion, it was really that they, that you could say they are not able to think. So so that's our situation in Germany.
Mm-hmm.
At that time.
Sounds very familiar.
It's all the capitalism's a problem all over the world. But
yeah,
it's too complicated to abolish it. But someone has to do, and capitalism would go away. But I don't have that one.
No, but it's a very interesting problem that the more, if they suppress capitalism, they suppress the virus. But if they let capitalism flourish, they let the virus flourish. It's really kind of like fascinating.
But the capitalists don't understand it. They
say, no.
They say, okay, if you're going to a supermarket, or if you're going to a place like Walmart or IKEA, the big ones, then there is no virus. But if you go to the cinemas, or if you go to a little concert, then there is the virus.
Yeah, how does that work?
There's also no virus, you know?
Right.
The virus is also acting according to the capitalists.
Yeah, apparently, right?
that's why they want to believe that we believe that.
Yeah, but you can't control viruses with fantasy, as Trump keeps on discovering. So that's interesting. Yeah,
Trump, he can do everything, he said. You
know? except that the world doesn't actually exist in his head. It exists outside of his head.
Okay, David. Was nice talking to you. And,
great talking to you, Frank.
We see you next month. Have a good time.
Yeah, good. See you next month.
Bye.
Take care.
Okay.